Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Cross and the Crescent, the radio show of Acts 17 Apologetics Ministries, where we discuss the phenomenon of Islam and the Christian response. I am your host, Nabil Qureshi. Now, this is the first show we've ever done, and you're in for a real treat. Today with me, I have Dr. Mike Lacona. How are you doing, Mike?
Good, Nabil. Good to see you.
And Dr. Lacona is a PhD in New Testament studies who specializes in studying the historical Jesus, having had multiple public debates with Muslims. He is currently the Director of Apologetics at the North American Missions Board. He's adjunct professor of Southern Evangelical Seminary. He speaks at churches and conferences across the nation, training Christians in defending the faith. And he just recently finished his PhD in New Testament studies. He completed his degree with distinction and with highest mark. Mike has had plenty of experience debating such personalities as Elaine Pagels and Bart Ehrman multiple times. Now, Mike, with this background in historical Jesus and in the resurrection, what got you interested in studying Islam?
Well, I think it was 2004, I think around October 2003, and I was contacted by a Muslim who was representing Shabir Ali, who at that point was perhaps the leading Muslim debater in the world. He contacted me and asked if I would be willing to debate Shabir on the resurrection of Jesus. Well, Shabir, as you know, Nabil, is a very experienced and polished debater, and I only had one debate under my belt at that point, so I was really hesitant to do it. I knew I had the truth on my side, but, you know, debating takes a lot of work, as you know, and I haven't been involved in quite a few of them now. So, you know, I prayed about it, talked to my board members, and we carefully thought about this and then decided, well, I needed to do this. So, took him on. I had really good contact with this Muslim who had contacted me. We had very very nice and collegial emails. Shabir and I ended up having a nice collegial debate. In fact, you were at that debate, weren't you?
Yes, I was, as a Muslim, in fact.
And that was interesting. Afterward, you know, I emailed Shabir's colleague and I said, hey, you know, enjoyed our interactions. It was pleasant. And he said, yes, Mike. In fact, you were probably the most gracious Christian I've dealt with. And so we left on very good terms. Well, 2 years ago, I wrote an article for Baptist Press titled Holy Jihad, What Are We to Do About Muslims? I think it was just after shortly after a terrorist attack in London or somewhere. And in that article, I pretty much said that when Islam says it's a religion of peace, what that means is that if once a nation has been subjugated and is under Islamic rule, then the people under that Islamic rule can live at peace. That's my understanding of what that means. It's presented a much different way in Western culture in order to think that Islam is a very peaceful religion, which it is not. Wherever there is active Islam, there's not peace, at least for other religions. I mean, it's difficult to name a Muslim-run country in the world where there is religious freedom. I mean, even in Iran today, where you're allowed to be a Christian, I know of two girls who were just, they've been in prison since earlier this year because they converted from Islam to Christianity, and they may be sentenced to death for that. So that is not freedom.
Just for converting to
Christianity. Just for converting to Christianity.
Wow.
That's not a lone incident. I mean, this is happening not only in Iran, but it's happening in Afghanistan. It's happening all over the world. So you know, I said that because of this, committed Muslims, and I don't want to say radical Muslims. I mean, we can say radical Muslims. Most people know what that means now. But I think it means committed Muslims. I think the what we call radical Muslims is what Muhammad would have called a true Muslim.
So what you're saying is the person that the media paints today as a radical Muslim is actually one who's just following Islam.
Absolutely.
Wow.
But I mean, you would know more on this than I would. You know, I approach Islam, you know, from just various different directions in terms of historical stuff. And I am not an expert on Islam. What I do is I argue, say, about Jesus' fate in the first century. Did he die? Did he rise from the dead? And, you know, I can do that and point out problems with the Muslim view as well as the evidence for Christianity. But, I have problems with Islam in that way. I don't see it as a religion of peace, as Westerners would define a religion of peace. And I said, you know, anything that stands in the way of Islam's world domination is considered to be an enemy of Islam. And as a committed Christian who loves the Lord and is committed to spreading the gospel and giving people a chance to accept this greatest message ever, that Jesus has come to the world, you know, as the Messiah and offers salvation for everyone through his atoning death and resurrection, that, you know, we, according to Muslims, would become enemies of Islam because we stand in the way. We're saying that Islam is wrong. And so if that's the case, then let me be clear. I'm an enemy of Islam in those terms. And boy, the guy who had set up that debate between Shabir and I, who had been very gracious in the past, he wrote me. And man, he was hot. And so we were quoting Quranic verses back and forth. And finally, man, he just came unglued. And he was talking about how capitalism is evil. We're all brainwashed. Islam is going to dominate the world.
Whoa. So this man who had been very congenial at first turned around and said, we're ultimately going to dominate the world and you're a capitalist.
That's right.
Wow.
You expose the darkness. And now all of a sudden the demons come out.
Wow.
When you shine light in there, and it's like now they're really mad. And, you know, once you expose it, that Islam is more than just a religion. It is a political system, and its goal is for world dominance. We'll stop nothing short of that. You know, the exposure is there, and now this guy came unglued.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Cross and the Crescent, the radio show of Acts 17 Apologetics Ministries, where we discuss the phenomenon of Islam and the Christian response. Now, this is our first show, and I'm here with Dr. Mike Lacona, world-renowned scholar in historical Jesus studies, and we're currently talking about Islam, and he's just mentioned how Islam seems to be a political system where people are actually trying to take over, ultimately, though they do it in a sense of Islam being a religion of peace. They use that kind of propaganda to start speaking with people out in the West, and then ultimately they begin taking over. Now, I have seen this for myself. By the way, Acts 17 Apologetics Ministries travels around the United States and into Europe even to promote Christianity and to debate Muslims. And we were in London recently, me and my debate partner, David Wood, who unfortunately can't be here with us today. While we were there, the government in the UK released a statement to the police saying that they should try not to charge Muslims with hate crimes because this gets the Muslims angry. This is the kind of thing that's happening in Western countries because Muslims are becoming a higher percentage of the population. In fact, we've seen that preaching Christianity to Muslims last year resulted in two Americans being sent back to the United States because what they were doing was considered a hate crime. Simply preaching Christianity to Muslims was considered a hate crime. Now, this is London, England, a bastion of free speech, one of the first places where free speech was propagated throughout the world. And now we see that Muslims are beginning to become a larger percentage of the population and free speech is going down the tubes. When I was in Michigan, Mike, last month, I actually felt some of this myself. In Dearborn, Michigan, the population is 30% Muslim. And we were at a public festival in Dearborn, and there was a booth there that had been set up by Muslims saying, if you have questions, ask us. And we went to that booth to ask a question. And Mike, would you believe it? Within 10 to 15 minutes, security guards had surrounded us, telling us, you can't preach Christianity here. You have to go to another part of the street if you want to preach Christianity, even though this was a public festival. And in fact, they started assaulting us and hitting us. This video footage can be seen on YouTube if you type in www.thecrossandthecrescent.com. It will take you to our blog page, the Acts 17 Apologetics blog page, where you can see this video for yourself. Assault and battery just because we asked a question to Muslims here in the United States. So it's very true what you're saying, Mike. Islam does seem to be a religion that wants to take over ultimately in a political sense, and only then will it be a religion of peace.
It's pretty scary when you think about it. The religious freedom that we have here in the United States today, we may very well not have that in 10 years.
Wow. And why would you say that that is?
Well, you see the way of Europe, and like what you just said, you know, there's a double standard that is going on. You've got Muslims who are allowed to preach, and I think you were telling me yesterday how there was a Muslim imam or leader on who was talking to a young kid on the corner, and by the time that kid left, he had converted to Islam. Mm-hmm. That is, you know, that's fine for Muslims to do that. But if a Christian goes out and preaches the gospel, it's a hate crime. There's a double standard there. We find this in our universities today, something that's very alarming. There is a report that can be downloaded for free online. It's called Religion and American Faculty, something like that. And it's part two. It's an extensive study funded by a Jewish organization, two Jewish scholars who interviewed, I believe it was hundreds of American faculty. And they found that roughly, I might be off by a percentage or two on each of these figures, but it's only a percentage or two. But it's like 22% of American faculty acknowledged having negative feelings toward Mormons. And about 34% acknowledged having negative feelings toward Muslims. But around 53% had negative feelings toward evangelical Christians.
So you're saying one in two university professors in the United States, according to this survey, says that those professors have a negative attitude.
That they themselves have a negative, cool, unfavorable feeling toward evangelical Christians.
Unbelievable.
And it went on, as they asked these faculty more questions, they found that they believed that Muslims ought to have a much greater say and part in American politics, whereas they believe that evangelical Christians should have no say in American politics. So this is very revealing, and the two Jewish scholars said it was very alarming because now they see that Christian parents who were saying all along that they wanted to send their kids to Christian schools because they didn't think their students were getting a fair shake, that they were being discriminated against because of their evangelical Christianity, that they had a legitimate concern, and this was something that liberal art institutions really had to consider. And so this is more than just, Nabil, this is more than just conservatism versus liberalism in the United States where there's a polarization. It's more than that. Because Muslims, as you know, are very conservative. They are against homosexuality. They're against abortion. And yet at the same time, these American faculty wanted Muslims by a significant margin to have a much larger influence in the political arena here in North America. They wanted Christians to have little to zero. So it is not just a cultural battle that's going on. It is a spiritual battle, and there's a frontal assault going on with Christianity right now.
That is an excellent point, that one cannot claim that this is a political issue. It seems to be more of a spiritual issue because the politics are about the same between the Muslims and the Christians when it comes to things like homosexuality. But in fact, it must be a spiritual thing. Excellent point. If you're tuning in, we are The Cross and the Crescent, the radio show of Acts 17 Apologetics Ministries, where we discuss the phenomenon of Islam and the Christian response. I'm Nabil Qureshi, and I'm here with Dr. Mike Lacona. Now, Mike, you are a historical Jesus scholar. Is that correct?
Yes.
And as such, you know fairly good amount about the early foundations of Christianity. Now, Christianity and Islam are two very, very broad topics, huge, but they're must be an issue or two that really divides, creates a schism between Islam and Christianity. What do you think those might be?
Well, I would say when we are talking with Muslims and we're talking about different things like, well, how does a person get to heaven and all of that? These, of course, are differences, but they're theological differences. They're differences that cannot be proved. It's like as a historian, I know that I can prove that Jesus died on the cross. But I can't prove, historically speaking, that his death was atoning, all right? And some things are better attested than others, of course. Like, I think there's extraordinary evidence that Jesus performed deeds that he and others regarded as miracles and exorcisms. I think there's extraordinary evidence that he rose from the dead. But the historical evidence for Jesus' virgin birth, it's just not there. That doesn't mean Jesus wasn't born of a virgin. It just means we accept that by faith. That's a truth of faith for the Christian. Whereas And if Jesus rose from the dead, then a virgin birth is child's play. You know, it's something we could expect. It's something that's not a problem. So I think when we're coming to the major points that we should focus on when having discussions with Muslims, I think we work on the resurrection of Jesus, show Jesus' fate, but even more specifically, Jesus' death by crucifixion.
And what exactly do Muslims believe about Jesus' death by crucifixion?
Well, according to Surah 4, verses 157-58, it basically says that the Jews thought that they crucified and killed Jesus, but they certainly didn't. That God made it appear that way, and God took Jesus up to himself, but they certainly didn't crucify and kill Jesus.
Mm. And so on this issue then, Muslims believe because of an injunction from the Quran, which is their holy scripture, that Jesus did not die on the cross. Yet as Christians, we believe he did.
Correct.
And you say this isn't a truth of faith, but rather a truth of history.
Yep.
What are the historical evidences that can show that?
Oh, I could give a lot of them. For example, this is something that's reported not only in early, multiply attested Christian sources, some of which are even eyewitness, but it's also reported in non-Christian sources, such as Tacitus, Josephus, Mar Bar Serapion, Lucian. They all report Jesus' death by execution by the Romans. You also have the fact that it's extremely unlikely that Jesus would have survived crucifixion, at least by natural causes. Given the nature of scourging and crucifixion in antiquity, there's a lot I could go into here, but you know, we'll run out of time. The fact of the criterion of embarrassment applied to it. I mean, the gospel authors, one thing that really points to their reliability is that they include so many embarrassing things, such as Peter's denial of Jesus, Jesus turning to Peter and calling him Satan. Get behind me, Satan. You're not looking out for what the will of God is. I mean, you don't say that to diss your church leader. So, you know, that's one thing right there in terms of when it comes to his death, Jesus is on the cross. He says, my God, why have you forsaken me? That is so different than what we find in the Jewish martyrdom literature, where the Jewish martyrs are pretty much saying, hey, racks and stones may break my bones, but resurrection awaits me. You know, and you've got, they're so bold and everything. God, I have not forsaken your law. But here's Jesus wanting out if possible in the garden. And when he's on the cross, he says, God, why have you forsaken me? You don't report these kinds of embarrassing things if you're trying to build someone up. So they're reporting the good, the bad, and the ugly. All of these things work toward Jesus' death by crucifixion. And unless someone can come up with any plausible, equally plausible position to the contrary, then the historian, as historian, must conclude that Jesus was crucified and that the process killed him.
Now, that sounds pretty convincing, but maybe it's because I'm a Christian and you're a Christian that we think these things are convincing, that Jesus must have died on the cross. What's the non-Christian perspective about Jesus' death on the cross?
Oh, for example, you got Bart Ehrman, an eminent agnostic New Testament historian. He calls Jesus' death by crucifixion is one of the most certain facts of history. Not about Jesus, but of history. John Dominic Crossan of the Jesus Seminar says the same thing. Marcus Borg of the Jesus Seminar. Gert Ludemann, an atheist New Testament historian, says it's one of the indisputable facts of history. I mean, I could go on and on. Nobody really questions. In all my studies, out of hundreds and hundreds of scholars, I only found about a handful in the entire universe who would say that either Jesus did not die on the cross or it's possible that he survived. Everybody else says it's virtually certain that Jesus died on the cross.
Wow. Well, if Jesus died on the cross then, and it's so clear that he died on the cross, then is there some kind of argument we can approach with Muslims to show them that they should reconsider their view of Jesus?
Yeah, I call it the Islamic Catch-22. And Catch-22 comes from a title of a book back in the 60s. And Catch-22 means, you know, you're caught between the proverbial rock and a hard place. Anywhere you go, you're going to get crushed. Mm. You are not in a good situation. It's a lose-lose situation, whatever you do. Mm. And I see an Islamic Catch-22 here. You see, I would say a Muslim could come back and say, yes, all the historical evidence points to Jesus' death by crucifixion, but the Quran says that God made it appear that way. So that only shows that the Quran is true in that sense. Well, not really, because it could also be that the Quran is mistaken. I mean, after all, it's a book written 600 years after the event, fifth-hand testimony at best, by a man who thought that he was demon-possessed when he was first approached by what he perceived as an angel. So aside from that, you think, you know, the Muslim argument at least is possible. So it's their book versus our book and all these other historical sources. So here's the Islamic Catch-22 argument. I say, okay, look, your book says one thing, our book says another. Let's put all that aside. Let's look at the external evidence. Let's come at it from a different angle. Now, I can show, historically speaking, I can give you six arguments that Jesus, historical arguments, that Jesus predicted his imminent and violent death. For example, it's early, being in Mark's gospel, there's an Aramaic play of words. It's multiply attested in every gospel source, Mark, M, L, John, possibly Q. It's in multiple literary forms. It appears in parable and simple didactic. There's the criterion of embarrassment that I mentioned earlier, that in which his predictions about his death appear. They lack signs of possible theologizing by the early church. They're often located within Jesus' reference to himself as the Son of Man, and so the criterion of dissimilarity applies. I know this is, some of this is very technical, and I wish I had time to unpack it. I just don't. Mm-hmm. The criterion of plausibility, Jesus' prediction would have come as no surprise within his life and ministry. I mean, his right man, John the Baptist, was making similar claims in terms of the kingdom coming and pointing to Jesus, and he's killed. So Jesus going and preaching the same message, we could expect the same thing. He could expect the same thing. And the prophets, you know, they all die in Jerusalem, so Jesus is expecting that. So now, here it is. Jesus makes these predictions. Now, if Jesus did not die an imminent and violent death, then he's a false prophet, and the Quran is mistaken because it calls him a great prophet. On the other hand, if Jesus did die an imminent and violent death, then the Quran is mistaken because it says he didn't. Either way, the Quran is wrong. It is not from God.
Hmm. So you're to wrap up your argument there, you're saying if Jesus said these things, which we can be historically certain that he did, that he predicted his upcoming death, then either Islam is wrong because Jesus was wrong about his death, or Islam is wrong because, what was the last part?
Because Jesus did die and it says he didn't. And the other one is he's wrong because if Jesus didn't die in that sense, then he was a false prophet. And he did predict these in his capacity as a prophet. Well, we can show that. He was teaching these things and showing how the scripture had to be fulfilled in this happening. So if he didn't, he's a false prophet. Since the Quran says he's a great prophet, then the Quran is mistaken. Either way, the Quran is mistaken regarding Jesus.
So it seems then, in the Islamic view, let's say Islam's true, let's say Jesus did not die on the cross. Everyone came away, all the disciples came away thinking he did die on the cross. It was made to appear to them, as the Quran says. What do you think, doesn't this make Jesus out to be a Messiah who's confused people, maybe even incompetent, not able to tell them that he was going to survive?
Yeah, and you would know this a little bit more than me on the Quranic references on this, Nabil, but I have read in the Quran where Jesus refers to his disciples as Muslims. And so the fact is, if Jesus did not die on the cross, and we can know with historical certainty that the disciples were going around claiming that Jesus had died and had risen from the dead and appeared to them. They sincerely believed this. They went to their deaths proclaiming this as the centrality of their message. If Jesus did not die, and the story was as the Quran says, then that means that God deceived those early Muslims. And the thing I would say is, if he deceived the early Muslims, I would say this to a Muslim, then how do we know that he's not deceiving you?
Wow. So once you introduce an all-powerful, deceptive God, then all rules are gone and all hell breaks loose.
Literally.
Well, we've been talking here on The Cross and the Crescent, the radio show of Acts 17 Apologetics Ministries, where we discuss the phenomenon of Islam and the Christian response. We've been talking to Dr. Mike Lacona, PhD in New Testament Studies, and we've just discussed that in Islam, if the Messiah, Jesus, who is considered the Messiah in Islam, if he did not die on the cross, as the Quran clearly says he didn't, then we have an incompetent Messiah because he wasn't able to tell Muslims, in other words, his disciples, that he was going to survive the cross. We have disciples who are incompetent because they went around preaching Christianity. And we also have an incompetent God because the Messiah he sent was able to accomplish nothing. Now, that is what the Islamic view of Jesus mandates. And quite frankly, Mike, I can't accept that God is like that.
No. The ramifications or the implications of what we're discussing here shows that the God of the Quran is quite different. He's inept at his work. I love the Christian God because he loves everyone. He loves those who love him. Jesus told us to love our enemies, not kill them, and to pray for those who persecute us. That's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's holiness. It's easy to hate your enemy.
That's a great message, Mike. It's a great way to end the show. As we wrap up here, we'd just like to say Islam is a powerful phenomenon today. It's not something to be taken lightly. It is slowly taking over Europe. As we have seen the population percentage increase in Europe, we have seen freedom of speech go down, and now we're seeing that in the United States, in Dearborn, Michigan.
Check out our website at www.answeringmuslims.com or alternatively www.thecrossandthecrescent.com. Now, we are self-funded. If you would like to donate and help with supporting this radio show, you can also visit our website, www.thecrossandthecrescent.com, and click on donations on the left side of the page. Or you can email us at donations@acts17.net. Again, The Cross and the Crescent is the radio show of Acts 17 Apologetics Ministries. We are committed to spreading Christianity and shedding light on Islam, discussing the phenomenon and educating people around the world in regards to Islam, what it is, and what it stands for. This is Nabil Qureshi with Acts 17 Apologetics. Please listen to us again, same time, next month. Take care.